Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the WUNC Legislative Studio on Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today on the program, you're going to hear about the opioid epidemic with an ear toward Europe. North Carolina Health News reporter Taylor Knopf recently returned from a reporting trip to France and Switzerland to learn about how those countries have attempted to deal with heroin and prescription drug problems. And she's here to tell us about some of her experience. Taylor, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Why go to Europe in the first place?
Why not go to Europe?
That's a very valid question. For this trip, with everything that's happening, I feel like I know the talking point. I feel like I'm almost desensitized to the talking point. Four North Carolinians die every day from opioid overdose deaths, that mouthful of this loaded, terribly sad phrase. But this is obviously an international and worldwide problem. I don't know if it's an epidemic everywhere, but why Europe?
A lot of countries in Europe experience these spikes in heroin use and overdose deaths and related infections such as hepatitis C and HIV a couple decades ago. And so they've had a kind of a jump start on figuring out how to deal with the issue. And so I went to two countries that experienced that spike in heroin use and have since significantly cut their overdose death rates and infection rates.
France and Switzerland.
Both, yes. And so I just wanted to go over there and say, hey, we have kind of a similar problem. They don't quite have the prescription drug problem that we have, but they still have this problem with heroin. And to be honest, it's heroin and this fentanyl product that is killing the majority of people now in North Carolina and across the U.S.
Okay. So you spent a week in Western Europe. And just for context, I asked you this before we started. France and Switzerland, are they the worst in Europe for this? Or, I mean, how do you stack them up contextually?
No, compared to all of Europe, and they each have their own struggles with different drugs. And honestly, drugs of choice change depending on the country. Sure. You know, some countries have a really bad meth problem, others cocaine. But Switzerland and France both dealt with heroin issues back in the 80s and 90s. And both have really reined in and controlled those problems. And they have really, really good programs that are set up to deal with addiction issues and substance abuse issues moving forward.
Okay. Let's start with Switzerland. Just in our little preamble prior, you're giving me some of the history of Switzerland and talking about the narrative and how we got to where we are based on the last 20 to 30 years. Set that up for us a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, so Switzerland has a really defined story, I guess, when we're talking about illegal drug use. So they had one of the few open drug scenes in Europe. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean in the 70s and 80s, people were using heroin and injecting in the streets. It was a very, very public problem.
And it was legal there.
No, it's never been legal.
It's never been legal. Okay.
No, it's always been an illegal drug. And they really took a war on drugs approach. They relied on law enforcement and policing before then, but it didn't work. Some people told me there were people literally dying and overdosing outside the political buildings in Bern, which is the capital. And they said this would be the equivalent of people dying on the White House lawn. So this was a very public problem. Everyone saw it. Law enforcement was tired of dealing with it. And so people were kind of corralled into these open drug scenes. So, for instance, in Zurich, there's a park that's right behind the Swiss National Museum. It's beautiful, next to this river that runs through Zurich.
A place where tourists could end up or end up close to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's right off the train station that you come in on. And it's a beautiful park now. My husband and I were there together. He acted as my photographer for part of the trip.
Lucky, Andy.
Lucky. Yeah. And so we happened upon this park, and it's, like I said, beautiful now, but it was formerly known as Needle Park because there were thousands of drug users and dealers that were all kind of corralled in this park, living there, injecting there, dying there, and the police just kind of let it happen because they didn't know what else to do.
So not legal per se, but more or less tolerated. We're going to tolerate it. Okay, thank you.
Tolerated because they had no they had put a number of people in jail, you know, processed a bunch of drug-related cases, mm-hmm. and this just didn't work. So they decided that the war on drugs is dead, doesn't work, so let's take a different approach. So end of the 80s, 90s, they pull together everyone, law enforcement, elected officials, the medical community, community members, and they all come together and they form this four pillars law. Okay. And so the four pillars that they passed were prevention, harm reduction, treatment, and repression or policing.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically said that we need all four of these things working together to address the drug problem. And they did it. And part of it was pretty controversial. This is probably what you want to talk about a little bit.
Maybe not. You have the floor. Go.
So harm reduction, as we have it in North Carolina, people are aware that we have needle exchanges recently legalized. Basically, that means let's do the least amount of harm. So we'll give you these clean needles to inject drugs, knowing that you're going to use them for an illegal purpose, but you're going to reduce the spread of HIV and hepatitis C.
Right.
And you have a chance to connect with these people and introduce them to resources should they ever want them or need them. So they have that very, very robust harm reduction. Both France and Switzerland have that.
Can you just real quick to hammer that point home, perhaps?
Yeah.
Can you give me an example? I mean, there are needle exchange programs here in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They are relatively new. We've heard from some advocates, or I've heard from some advocates in reporting I've done in recent years, that they could be expanded. But in comparison with North Carolina, is there a harm reduction measure that you saw in Switzerland that trumps what we have here, or just would represent something that's expanded to what we have here?
Yes. So in both France and Switzerland, actually, they have these harm reduction centers, which I don't know the number of how many there are in Switzerland, but I know that there are 800 in France.
Hmm.
That's compared to about 2,930 in North Carolina.
Okay.
And they offer a wider range of services for drug users. Not only the harm reduction materials, like the needles and the cotton and things like that,
mm-hmm.
but they offer them places to wash their clothes, to sleep. There's educators and social workers and psychiatrists on site, which basically in North Carolina, needle exchanges are more of a grassroots effort by people who just feel passionate about it and have...
It's state-run in both of these countries.
It's state-run and state-funded.
Okay.
And you have to remember they have universal health care in both countries.
Right.
So everyone has insurance. Everyone can access treatment of any kind, whether it be addiction treatment or medical.
Okay.
So that is one caveat to remember when we're talking about
sure.
these countries. They have the funds behind them.
So back to the four pillars. There's the harm reduction.
So harm reduction, the one kind of maybe controversial one,
mm-hmm.
we don't have this in the United States, is legalized drug consumption rooms. So these are places where people come, they get their clean supplies to inject with or smoke or whatever they're going to do.
Right.
And they go to a chair and they can use in that room. Meanwhile, there's medical staff nearby to make sure they're injecting properly, not you know, ruining their veins or shooting up into their arm muscle or something.
Do they inject themselves or is
yes.
there? Okay.
You have to inject yourself.
Heroin?
Heroin.
Crack, LSD. I mean, I'm not a big drug person. What?
Yeah, they're mostly injectables.
Okay. Okay.
But a lot of these facilities, I visited a couple
yeah.
and they would have spaces to smoke. Some people, the purity of heroin is so low in some of these countries
mm-hmm.
that they actually prefer to smoke heroin rather than inject.
Okay.
So there are smoking stations. But the idea being that they come to this safe space, and for the drug user, they're going to have clean supplies, and if they do overdose or have an issue, there's a medical personnel nearby to help them. So right there, you're reducing the risk of an overdose death.
Sure.
And your risk of HIV or hepatitis C infection. So that's the harm reduction effort. And if you think about it from the public's perspective, they're no longer seeing the drug user in the street, and then those needles are no longer in the street, and that's also a benefit to law enforcement.
There's obviously a stigma with addiction, and we talk about, I think you size it up well, and I should note, I haven't even said this yet, you have written a series of stories about this reporting trip, and those are available on NorthCarolinaHealthNews.org. As it pertains to addiction, there is a hump that I think proverbially people are perhaps getting over a little bit more frequently, that this is a real disease as opposed to, you know, this weak moral outcome, so to speak. I think you used the word moral in one of your stories, which I thought kind of captured the divide pretty well. I'm trying to ask a follow-up here as it relates to these drug use rooms, which is, even if they're established and part of the status quo now in these countries, I imagine there's still some opposition to this, some people that still think this is a bad idea, a dangerous and enabling practice. Or what kind of opposition did you encounter or hear about?
Yeah, so Switzerland, actually, there's not too much pushback for these drug consumption rooms. They pride themselves on being a very pragmatic people. So they just found the places where the most drug users were using and set up a consumption room right there.
Mm-hmm.
In France, though, there is some pushback to drug consumption rooms. They just started them 3 years ago, whereas the Swiss have been doing this now for like two decades.
Right.
The French have it set up as a six-year pilot project. And so there are only two consumption rooms right now, I believe, in the whole country.
Okay.
The one in Paris is the one I visited, and it's very controversial. It is actually set up inside the hospital. So drug users are coming through with just a separate entrance to the hospital and using and going back out. A lot of the experts there, people that run these things, would say, you know, we have a NIMBY problem in Paris, not in my backyard. We mm-hmm. have that phrase here in mm-hmm. the U.S.
We sure do.
Which I thought was funny.
Hi, Brent Woodcox. I mean, he's always, I can't let that pass through without at least mentioning his name on Twitter actively.
So they just don't want these people in their backyard because it's an undesirable set of people. And they, in the Paris especially, they don't want their tourism disrupted by drug use.
Sure. Big economic drive. I mean, I certainly understand that argument. Quick question here. The drugs that are being used, is this medical grade heroin that they are getting through pharmaceutical avenues? I mean, where are they getting the drugs from?
So in legalized drug consumption rooms, anywhere, as far as to my knowledge, that they have these in Switzerland and in France, people are bringing their own product in.
Okay.
That they are buying elsewhere. And I should say that the product in both of those countries is much lower purity level than the United States.
Not as dangerous as
It's the percentage is low. But it has a mixture of a bunch of other undesirable substances in it as well, but they do not have a fentanyl problem. I should mention that we have this product named fentanyl. It's it is used in the medical community, but the stuff that's on the streets is mostly black market, and it's 100 times more potent than morphine. And so people are getting this accidentally and just keeling over.
Would kill a horse. I mean, I feel like I've read that. It's incredibly powerful. Is it a horse tranquilizer? I might be confusing it with something else.
No, it's something that we use in the medical community for end-of-life care. But these are people who have really high tolerances to morphine or on a drip, you know, in very measured-out doses by, like, anesthesiologists and other medical professionals. So.
I am guilty of steering you all over the place here. But this,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. There are these four pillars that you talked about in Switzerland that they adopted 20 years ago. We've met it through two?
We've talked about just prevention, which is education, and then the harm reduction piece, mm-hmm. which has, you know, needle exchange mixed with this drug consumption room. Drug consumption rooms are not legal in the United States. They tried to open one in California, but that measure failed in September of last year.
So it was before the state legislature there, and the state legislature voted not to.
The state legislature, no, they were interested in it. I think it was the governor who ultimately vetoed it.
And do you, throwing you on the spot with a legal question, do you have a sense of if, or maybe the better word would be when, California or Massachusetts or New York implements one of these centers, is it up, would it be ripe for a legal challenge either on a state or a federal level? I mean, would you expect there to be somebody that would try to shut it down?
There might always be. I mean, obviously, we have there's some discrepancy between states that have legalized marijuana and then the federal government that has not. So that issue will always be there. But we do have these needle exchanges all over the U.S. And it's kind of the same idea, right? You know people are coming. You know they're users. And they probably have a product on them. And there's just this idea or sense that law enforcement knows that this is like a public health effort, and they're kind of stepping away and letting it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing over there. Both countries have not legalized heroin or cocaine or anything like that. Right. They actually, neither one has legalized marijuana, surprisingly.
Very interesting.
Just getting to the treatment side of things. So this is, again, very specific to Switzerland. They are the only, they're not the only country doing this, but they are one of the first. I think they might be the first. They basically opened these heroin-assisted treatment programs. So, yes, that is what it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Users are coming in and being treated with heroin. And this is medical-grade heroin that they are getting from the facility. And this stuff, I've seen it, it's completely see-through. It's clear.
And this is again, it's a state-run, state-financially-backed facility.
Yes.
Where people go and a heroin-assisted facility.
Yeah. Okay. And so there are doctors that staff it, nurses, psychiatrists, social workers, everybody is there for these folks. The idea is that you enter these programs when you have failed other substitution programs, such as methadone or buprenorphine, things that we're familiar with here.
Mm-hmm.
They have those as well. And so people who have failed those and want to try something different, they can try heroin-assisted treatment. And everyone I talked to there about it said the idea behind this is not to get people off of drugs, but to make sure the drug user is the healthiest person that they can be and just the happiest person and most productive member of our society that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is coming to a heroin site twice a day, they are interacting with medical staff, they are getting treatment and care they need. They're also getting a clean product that doesn't have anything that's going to kill them in it.
Right.
And you suddenly free up a lot of their money and time. So these people who used to spend their days living on the streets and looking for the product, finding the money for the product,
right.
no longer are doing any of that. So I met with a woman right after she finished getting her treatment for the day in Geneva. And, you know, she walked over to the coffee shop with her dog and we sat down and talked. And she looked like one of my mom's friends. Like, she just looked like a suburban white mom. And she is. She's a mom. She works, has a job, had an apartment.
What kind of job?
I believe she worked on like in an equestrian program.
Okay.
But that wasn't her job always. But anyway, she's always had a steady job.
Right.
But she's been on heroin for like 30 years. And she sees it as, this is the disease that I have and I take this treatment so that I don't fall off the wagon.
Please come up with a better analogy if this is a lousy one. But in some form or fashion, similar to somebody who has high blood pressure taking blood pressure medication.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little more combustible and high risk, I think. But, I mean, that's the way they think about it, right?
They see it as a chronic illness of addiction. And they're just going to get their daily treatment. It's not going to affect you any differently than if you were given morphine at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially keeping their life stable.
Okay. We are chatting with Taylor Knopf here on the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can follow her on Twitter, TayKnopf. She is a rural reporter with North Carolina Health News, covering rural health issues. This is a reporting project that took Taylor well beyond the reaches of rural North Carolina to France and Switzerland to learn about how they are trying to combat the opioid epidemic and crisis in those parts of the country. She has a number of stories that she has published coming out of this reporting trip, and you can read them on nchealthnews.org. The folks can read a lot more about France. We're going to primarily be talking about Switzerland today in this conversation, just because that's what we've been talking about. You mentioned three of these four pillars, the fourth one being kind of the policing mechanism. What did you learn there? What is the approach there in Switzerland?
Instead of policing every, you know, person that's using drugs, they've kind of begun to differentiate between the users and then the, like, big-level dealers. A lot of times, users, they may be selling a little bit locally to their friends, but they're not usually organized enough for, like, a high-level operation.
Right, like a big cartel or something.
So they've kind of discovered that. So just to put it into perspective, when they first started with this new law, they were processing about 20,000 cases a year that were drug-related, heroin-related. In the last few years, they're averaging about 5,000.
Wow.
So they've just...
75% reduction.
Right. They're just not really focusing on the individual level person anymore. They're focusing more on the high level stuff.
Sure.
And then one thing I learned from the gentleman, he's a psychiatrist that runs the heroin assisted treatment program in Zurich, is he was said, you know, once you take over the drug market the way we have, people know they have these low threshold substitution programs, meaning anybody at any time can just walk in and be in treatment within 20 minutes. There's not all these hoops you have to jump through. They have the health care insurance like we talked about.
Right.
So they've got these...
It's more streamlined bureaucracy, or perhaps less bureaucracy, but...
So people can walk in and be in treatment within minutes, and sometimes that even means that they can be on in heroin-assisted treatment, which is actually a very small cohort of people, I will say.
Okay.
He said once you take all that and you give people this safe, reliable product, you weaken the black market, and you weaken the power that gangs and criminal activity have over your society. Drugs are not the driving criminal force anymore.
So are there still open drug scenes?
No.
Okay.
Those have been closed down. People are using drugs mainly at facilities, medical facilities.
Okay. This has been the approach in Switzerland across the last two decades or so. Mm. Is there data to demonstrate that this is a decent approach, a great approach, somewhere in the middle? I mean, what have been the results? If you can share with us from a standpoint, I guess, of, I mean, you mentioned the arrests, and those,
right.
I mean, that those have dropped significantly. What about overdose deaths?
So over the past two decades, they've had a 64% drop in overdose deaths. And then in terms of new HIV infections per year, they've had an 83% drop. So,
and Hep C, if you have that in front of you. You're looking at your laptop, but I'm not looking at your laptop.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'll just run those back. 64% reduction in eight. You said 64 and 84. Were those the two numbers you said? Overdose deaths was 60 plus and then 80 plus on HIV. I mean, those are big numbers. And what about hepatitis C?
There's been an 83% decline in hepatitis C infections as well, because they're testing constantly as well at these facilities.
Right.
And
they have access to that care when they're
to the care, and they have access to clean supplies so that they're not spreading or infecting anyone new. I should say, this all sounds kind of radical to people in the United States to, you know,
so where I was going
have
next.
These government-funded places for people to use drugs that are illegal and to give them heroin, right? But when you look at the numbers, it's really hard to fight with that, you know? Wouldn't we love to have a 63% drop in our overdose deaths in North Carolina?
yes. You and I don't advocate for things as reporters,
no.
But it would be tough to advocate for a significant improvement in what is a problem. And what we've heard from Democrats and Republicans and independents, I mean, this is a problem that has affected everybody in every pocket or
this
every
does not
corner
discriminate
of this state.
Against race or class. So yeah, it sounds very radical, but they also didn't do this flippantly. The Swiss had trials and really, really robust scientific trials before they ever implemented this. And they did have some pushback from little groups within the country, of course, that were saying, you know, this is not right. They even had a little bit of pushback from outside the country. There were some groups that came in, I think ordered by the UN and some others to come check on them. And ultimately, these outside groups thought it was fine when they saw the data. And then the groups inside the country, they did once rally up enough petitions to put up a referendum, and the people voted for it again, because they just saw the progress. And so the majority of Swiss citizens voted for this again.
Culturally, this obviously would not be embraced in the United States today. I can't speak for 20 or 30 years from now. But politically, is there an argument, or economically, is there an argument, is there a pathway that you could see this being more palatable, maybe in Raleigh, maybe in Sacramento, a more liberal state capital? Build the bridge for me, if only hypothetically, as to how what you saw a couple months ago in Switzerland could play out, even if only in small part, here in the United States. Is it feasible?
I think that there could be some small lessons to be learned. Maybe a lower threshold to get into some substitution programs, right? We really regulate these pretty tough. If someone breaks the rules at a methadone clinic, they're often kicked out. Mm-hmm. That's not the case in Switzerland. They realize that people are human and they're going to mess up. Just like you don't take a diabetic who is, you know, eating too much sugar and kick them out of treatment. You're like, no, okay, we're going to work on this. Like, everyone slips up. So there could be something to learn maybe from, like, this low threshold approach to substitution programs. They also have a number of drug check sites, places that users can come and just get their drugs checked for any other substance that they weren't aware of that's in there. And given the rampant fentanyl problem we have, people, they buy substances and they don't know this is inside it. I could see that as maybe one small piece of something they do over there that might be palatable to people in the United States.
Taylor Knopf, reporter with NC Health News, has written a series of stories about dealing with the opioid epidemic in Europe. I'm going to make perhaps what's the awkward turn here and try to end on a lighter note, because this is, I mean, this is a tough and sad and challenging topic to continue to talk about and report on, but one of those ones that, in my opinion, is imperative for us to continue having conversations about. So we'll go lightning round here, deviating away from a lot of what we've learned here. And I would encourage you to go read these stories. I have, full disclosure, not read all the stories yet, but I'm excited to read them as they come out. Better architecture, France or Switzerland?
Oh, I would say France is way more ornate, but Switzerland is like, almost looks like a storybook. Like, yeah.
Best thing you ate on your reporting trip to Western Europe?
I have to say, you just can't beat the like cheese plates with French wine in Paris. Or Bordeaux. I was in Bordeaux for a little bit of my trip.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I've never been to France. A New Year's resolution that you've set, if you're willing to share, and if you're still following it. I didn't make any New Year's resolutions.
Oh, yes. Okay, my husband and I do have a New Year's resolution to organize our house. And, like, we're going to go to IKEA and do it. Like, we're trying. We're getting rid of all the crap first.
So you've made the resolution. Have you made progress on getting rid of all the crap yet?
Oh, yes. We've already gone to the Raleigh Rescue Mission once with some of it.
Last one. One opioid proposal that you expect to gain significant traction or significant conversation here in this building, the North Carolina General Assembly, in 2019?
So we can expect that they had this committee meeting that met four or five times this past year, and it was all about resentencing and restructuring how the criminal justice system approaches opioids. So there were some recommendations that came out of that committee, and with that, they all recommended significant state funding for treatment. So I expect that'll be a conversation.
Taylor Knopf is on Twitter at TayKnopf. You can read her work and her colleagues' work at nchealthnews.org. Taylor, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Jeff.
Glad to have you along, as always, for the latest edition of the WNC Politics Podcast. You can subscribe on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. Stay up to date with whatever is happening on the North Carolina political scene at our website throughout the week at wunc.org. For Taylor, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you again soon.